When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Earlier this year, at the end of March, the administration, the White House, Trump, issued an executive order on elections. And I think the number one thing for people to know is that this order is unlawful. And in fact, a part of it has already been put on pause. The president has no authority to order what he did in this executive order.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design. Your voting rights aren't what they used to be. Voting rights in America is something that have never been able to be taken for granted. But right now, there is a multifaceted attack on voting access that is taking place at all levels, federal, state, and local. So what can you do about it? And how can you protect your vote in the next election and the one after that and the one after that? Well, that's why I'm so glad to have with me as a guest this week, Hannah Fried of All Voting is Local. Hannah, thank you for joining Justice by Design.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I always start out by asking my guests to introduce themselves to our audience so that they know a little bit about you and what you do there at All Voting is Local.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a co-founder and the executive director of All Voting is Local. I've been with the organization since we got off the ground 2017, early 2018. And we work in 8 states. We're a multi-state voting rights organization. Our work is focused on fighting for free and fair elections, particularly for voters of color and other historically disenfranchised folks. And our work is, in our theory of change, our focus, our energy is around election officials and the decisions that those people are making about your ability to register and to vote and to have your vote count. This is your local election clerk. It's your board of elections. It's your secretary of state. They're making decisions about where to put polling locations. They're making decisions about how to process your voter registration application. They're making decisions about whether your vote is going to count. And we want to make sure when they're making those decisions that they're thinking about the communities that they're supposed to be serving and making sure that that right to vote is truly accessible to them.
And it's no better time to have organizations like yours focused on this. You must be very busy because we have a lot to talk about. And even if we had 4 hours, I don't think we can fully work through all the things that are happening right now in terms of suppressive voting action. But I want to start our conversation with something that I don't think gets as many headlines as other things like, for example, the redistricting fight in Texas. But it's the fact that the federal government is seeking voting data from all states, and some of them are complying. Make us understand who is asking for this data and why are they saying that they need it?
Yeah, terrific place to start, actually. Look, I'll say first as a starting place, there's a lot that has happened in the past 6 months that was not on my bingo card. For nothing. I live here in D.C. Where
me too.
We are having, we're having quite a week here.
We certainly are.
Takeover of our local law enforcement and the deployment of National Guard. You know, talking about this stuff with my kids is not what I expected for my life, frankly. And that is true with voting. I will say, though, on the specific point that you've raised, we saw the first Trump administration actually make a similar ask. They stood up a task force on elections. It was the Pence-Kobach Commission is what it was called, named for, of course, the vice president and for a Secretary of State of Kansas. And they were looking to get into state voter rolls. And states said no. And some of them said no in very colorful ways. I will note the Secretary of State of Mississippi at that time, Delbert Hoseman, who was a Republican, used some language to the effect of telling the administration to go jump in the Gulf of Mexico. And Mississippi was a pretty good jumping off point. So they were not interested in getting federal involvement in their voter rolls. And I'll note this is private voter data, right? This is not something to which the federal government has any entitlement. Why does DHS, Department of Homeland Security, or the U.S. Department of Justice need your private voter data? They won't say. They won't say. And so that can only lead to people having very real, very legitimate concerns about what that data is going to be used for, what that whether it's related to voting or for other privacy reasons. This administration doesn't have a great track record so far on privacy about people's information in this country. And so I think it is absolutely right for elections officials to be approaching these asks with quite a lot of skepticism, getting to the bottom of why they're being asked for this information, and as appropriate, declining to provide it. And we saw that just this week, for example, with Oregon.
Yes, yes. I was very happy that a lot of states have come out, states that I spend a lot of time in, like Massachusetts and Connecticut, have also declined this. But let's talk a little bit more about this, because what I don't like to, make doomsday predictions or advance conspiracy theories, but I have deep concerns about the federal government collecting voting data in particular, especially when we know that the federal government and the Trump administration is blessing efforts like those underway in Texas to gerrymander and jerry-rig the system to ensure that Republicans have an advantage heading into elections. A reminder that they wouldn't do this if their policies were popular, but that's for another discussion. This is really threatens to disenfranchise millions of people with these types of partisan redistricting efforts that are being hurried through. But gaining voter access, to me, one of my worries would be that it would not only be used in efforts like this, which is supposed to be based on census counts that are supposed to count everyone, but also I think about just instilling fear. I mean, before the federal government takeover of DC, we've seen ICE officials, ICE agents going through neighborhoods and targeting people. And I would worry that if I were an immigrant, naturalized, and I'm living in a home that maybe is of people of mixed citizenship, or I have relatives who are not permanent citizens, that having information about my voting could put myself or my family members in danger, knowing that the federal government may have access to that data. What should we be worried about, and how worried should we be about this?
I think Americans have a lot of reason to worry. They have reason to worry for because of what you're describing, right? That there is a broader environment of fear. There's a broader environment of fear around people's private information. There's a broader environment of fear around being targeted, particularly for Latino communities, for Black communities. There is also the election-specific dimension of this, which is very, very concerning. This administration is obsessed with promoting disinformation about our elections. Lies about who's voting, lies about how they're voting. And I think it is a very reasonable conclusion to draw that this data will be used to further justify a lie. There is no reason for the federal government to access state voter information. States have ample checks and balances for managing their voter lists. The federal government, taking the fact that it is obsessed with the administration, with these lies about our voting system, combining that with the fact that they're collecting, amassing large amounts of data that is private about voters in this country, I think can only lead us to conclude that they are going to use that for bad purposes, for things that will lead to voters getting their ability to vote cut off. And that's not, it's not only these lists, right? It's also the administration's support for the SAVE Act, which is a federal bill that would disenfranchise millions of people by requiring every person registering or re-registering to vote to provide their passport or their birth certificate. That means 69 million women who don't have a birth certificate that matches their married name. Right? What does that mean? That bill is likely to come back. And there are also 160 pieces of similar legislation moving through states. And these bills are supported by the administration and its allies. And so I think this paints a really gloomy picture going into next year. We should talk about how there is also reason to hope, but there's a lot to be worried about. We'll get there.
This is a solutions focused podcast, but we need to identify the problem before we go into the solutions. So
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for the shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Just a reminder too, just the very name of your organization, All Voting is Local. It is, which is one major reason why all these claims of widespread voter fraud are just untrue. It would require the coordination, not just between states, but with local districts and community by community to somehow get into cahoots and turn a national election, which just does not happen. It never has happened, and it won't happen so long as our voting system stays in place and we don't see an increasing federalization of it, which is exactly one of the perils of it. But sort of explain that a little bit. This is taking place at a time, or not at a time, this is taking place in our way of government where elections, even national ones, even presidential ones, are handled locally. Congress can set only a few rules specific to time, place, and manner for federal elections. Everything else is down to the local government. So how does that help frame, as we move to talk about solutions, what this problem is?
You know, I think that the way to think about this is actually exactly where you started, which is that we have a highly decentralized system of election administration. And look, in a lot of ways, we should. There are some baseline expectations that every voter in this country should expect. We actually, as an organization, have a pro-voter agenda that is national, that says that every voter should have 2 weeks to vote in person before Election Day, that no voter should have to wait more than 30 minutes to cast their ballot. We know that's a big problem for students. It's a big problem for voters of color, particularly living in urban areas, right? But we also know that the solutions to how people can vote and how they should be able to vote are really local, because people live in communities, and sometimes they live in really rural areas, and sometimes they live in areas with a lot of public transit. Sometimes people need to vote by mail because they work three jobs, right? It is right and appropriate that we have a lot of local tailoring to how we vote in this country. And it is, frankly, in this moment, one of the things that is going to serve as such an important bulwark against this federal attack on voting, because it is truly these local election administrators who are heroes. And I think we've seen that more and more in the last 5 years when they ran elections during COVID, when they ran elections under threat, including from this president and his allies, who brought attention to them and threatened them in ways that led them to be almost unable to do their jobs. It is those people who are standing between us and a true degradation of our democracy by continuing to register Americans, by continuing to offer early voting, by continue to offer voting in person, by mail, and to count every single ballot that gets cast.
I think it's so important just to underscore, as you said, in 2020, we had an experiment in making voting more accessible, and it was a rousing success. We have data that shows that making voting easier not only can be done and also done securely, but that it broadens the electorate. It makes it easier for all people to vote. Before I moved into DC proper, I lived in Northern Virginia. And this is a problem that has existed long before the current administration. I remember voting in the presidential election in 2008. And I stood in line for something like 3 hours. I was almost late to work. I had the foresight to get out early. And it was because I was in a voting district that had 4 voting stations for a big community, which included huge apartment buildings. So it was so many people lined up in it, and it was paper ballots. It was no reason to only have 4 stations. You could have had 100 stations in there. It was paper ballots. You didn't even need machine. Yeah. We had a pencil and a piece of paper. It was so ridiculous, but that's how much the folks in Richmond allocated. That's the resources that were allocated. Meanwhile, fast forward to 2020, it took 5 seconds. I took my ballot, I dropped it in a drop box in a block away, and I went back home. It just boggles the mind that we didn't learn a lesson from that. Well, it doesn't boggle my mind because people don't want that lesson to be learned. It's a lot easier when voting is made harder. Okay, before we get to some good solutions, I just have one more thing to bring up, which I think isn't on people's radar, is that besides the efforts to get voting data records, there is also an executive order that was signed that is aimed at these local election officials. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. Earlier this year, at the end of March, the administration, the White House, Trump, issued an executive order on elections. And I think the number one thing for people to know is that this order is unlawful. And in fact, a part of it has already been put on pause. The president has no authority to order what he did in this executive order. It, for example, makes it harder for military and overseas voters to cast their ballots. It would require, and this is one part that's been put on pause, require every American to show proof of their citizenship before they can register and vote. It would decertify voting machines that are in use in 39 states. Back to your point about, you know, waiting 3 hours to vote or getting in and out of your polling location, being able to get to your job on time. This is stuff that the president cannot do. But what I think it does do is give us a pretty good roadmap of where this administration wants to take elections in this country. And to your point about your own positive experience voting in Virginia and the contrast, Americans want options. Americans like being able to vote in the way that works for them. And I can tell you, Americans do not want to lose their voting equipment in 39 states before the 2026 or 2028 elections. That is a non-starter for the people of this country. Mm-hmm. So that really shows you that this administration is way out of step with where the American people are. And maybe this leads us into the second part of this conversation with the good news. I think that is one of the most important pieces of how we get ourselves out of this situation that we find ourselves in and really fight back on the administration's efforts to take over elections in this country for their own advantage.
All right. So let's get to that. What is some of the work that you are doing in this effort, and what can our listeners do, and what can they tell their friends and family to do to ensure their right to vote is protected?
Yeah. You know, I might start by discussing kind of where you were describing about, the way that Richmond had allocated only a certain amount of voting equipment to your polling location. That's actually a really nice example of the exact kind of work that we do at our organization. You know, we're on the ground year in, year out. We don't just do our advocacy work, in October of a presidential election year, because the decisions that that official was making, I don't know the particular circumstance, but whoever that was who made that decision, they didn't make that decision in October of, I think you said it was 08, right? That was the decision that they were probably making in 2007, right? A year, 18 months before you even thought about going to your polling location. And so our work, our staff on the ground in the field, they are meeting with elections officials. They're talking to them about things just like that. How many people are you going to have working at your polling location? How are you going to set up your voting machines? How are you processing your voter registration applications to make sure that every person who tries to register to vote gets on your voter rolls? And more these last 5 years, we've been there saying, hey, we want to make sure these votes are going to get counted. Let's talk about your process. Let's talk, make sure that you are going to follow the law of this county, of this state, and count every single vote that gets cast here. So that's really what we do. And there's a big role for people to get involved. And that means right now, it was actually just this week, National Poll Worker Recruitment Day. Those people who are at your polling location, they don't come out of nowhere. They're members of your community who get trained to be there. And I think I would love to encourage everybody who's listening, go be a poll worker. If you're mad about what is happening right now in this country, whatever that issue is, the economy, the National Guardsmen in your streets, you're worried about your kids' schools, you're worried about trash collection, all of that is about voting. All of that comes down to voting. And one way you can make sure that everybody in your community can vote is by becoming a poll worker. Power the polls. The polls is the place to sign up to do that. I encourage all your listeners to go ahead and do it. The other thing that people can do is get to know your local election official. They need you. They want to know who you are because they want to serve the community that they work in. They are your neighbor. They live near you somewhere. And they are the person who's charged with making all of these decisions. If they're having a public meeting, get down to that meeting. You want a new voting location because you heard there wasn't one somewhere in your community? You can ask them to put one there. You can go to your state secretary of state website. You can find out who your local clerk is. Go and get to know them. Go to those meetings and become an advocate for your community. Because these small decisions that we're talking about, how many of those polling stations or that those voting locations you have, in that polling place, having only four, you saw that wasn't enough. There are millions of Americans across this country who are experiencing the same thing. And that is something that we can all have a hand in changing.
I'm really glad that you are saying this and underscoring the fact that this is a community-based call to action. These action items are really community-based. Yes, it is important to let your members of Congress know how you feel about things. Yes, it is important to talk even to your state lawmakers. But this voting really is local. It's really true. And so understanding how this system works is so crucial in knowing what to do. Hannah, how do you and our voters and our listeners find hope at a time like this when there's so much bad news? I mean, we didn't even touch on the fact that the Supreme Court stands poised to fully render the Voting Rights Act to but a skeleton, and that there are ongoing and bigger redistricting fights every single day, not just in places like Texas and Louisiana, but elsewhere as well, and that people are worried and scared about the future of their democracy. What are you taking hope from in this moment, and what should our listeners take too?
Yeah, you know, I will answer this truly in an honest way, which is that I also feel scared. I do. I mean, I'm a parent of two young kids.
Yeah.
This is not what I want for my children. It's not what I want for anybody's child. It's not what I want for myself. But the thing that really, truly does make me hopeful is all of the people who are doing exactly what I was just saying that every one of your listeners can do. Mm. Our staff don't do this work alone. They go and they'll testify before a state legislature. And you know who else is there? People from the community. In Nevada, people from communities went and testified about the need for more voting locations for Native American voters on tribal land. In Georgia, they're going to their Board of Elections meetings and saying, hey, I don't want an election denier sitting on our local election board. I mean, that's like the fox guarding the hen house. What are we doing here? People are turning out. And if they are turning out in the summer of 2025 to ensure that the right to vote is protected in this country, you can only imagine how they are going to turn out to protect the right to vote when the election is around the corner in 2026 and 2028. And that is, I am not kidding you, it is truly the thing that gets me out of bed every single morning.
Yeah, that's so important. That is so important. And I really appreciate that being a good note to end on. Hannah Fried, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Really a pleasure.
And I'm just going to add one quick thing to what we talked about. All local politics is important. So you should show up at your city council meetings, your school board meetings, your all of the levers of government. They can hear from you too. And honestly, what happens at the local level affects your life far more than what the folks here in Washington, D.C. do on a federal level. It really makes a big difference. And that's why the democracy that we have begins with the three words of our Constitution: we, the people. Do not give up your power. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. I'll be back next week with another episode of Justice by Design. Don't forget to follow this podcast wherever you get your pods. And I will drop in the show notes information about All Voting is Local so you can find out a little more about the organization and what you should do. Thanks for joining me. See you next week. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design.